trap, we at the barbershop. Stay tuned.
Happy Wednesday to everyone, and happy whatever you're happy about. Another great day to talk about all the craziness of college football. I got Aaron Wright with me, Bobby Howard, and today's special guest, Cody Stutes, who you can find him if you're in Houston, Houston radio, I believe 3 to 7 p.m. On tell us where they can find you, Cody.
Yeah, ESPN 97.5, 3 to 7 p.m. On radio here in Houston. We got the app. We got a Twitch stream. So ESPN 97.5 on my name and your Google machine. And I'll.
Sounds good. Yeah, so Cody is a, does Houston sports, but also is a college football savant. And I'm super excited to have him on this episode in particular because we are talking about the Heisman trophy and the finalists. The award is will be announced this Saturday. I believe voting was ended on Monday, and the finalists were announced. And Cody Stutes is a Heisman voter, so it's a special treat to have someone like him to come and talk about the award and in the process. So. I know you got an appointment to get to, so I won't linger any longer, Cody. I want to ask you first, this was a weird year for the Heisman race. I think, just due to the preseason favorites like Spencer Rattler, Sam Howell and others sort of being below, playing below expectations. And then you had like the midseason surge of Kenneth Walker and his great story. And then that kind of like got quiet after the Ohio State game. And then it seems like the finalists, got the benefit of some late season momentum this year. What was your experience like evaluating the Heisman candidates this year?
I'm glad you brought that up because it has been like a very unique year. Like if you told me the best player in the Big Ten, a quarterback from the SEC, a quarterback from the ACC were going to be a Heisman finalist, I'd be like, cool. So Stroud and Corral and Sam Howell are there. Like, great. Awesome. That's obviously, not the case. Like Bryce Young has, exploded onto the scene. And you talk about the late season surge, obviously what he was able to replicate with that last drive there, against Auburn. And then obviously the SEC championship game, the championship game, obviously a big bonus for Young, a big bonus for Aiden Hutchinson and stuff like that. Cause they get a whole nother, set of, they get the eyeballs all to themselves in that situation. So, yeah, it has been a really unique year. There was a time in the middle of the season where we were talking about cornerbacks getting Heisman Trophy votes potentially. There was a movement at one point for the San Diego State punter to get some votes because he was so good and so dominant on helping the Aztecs. So this has been a very unique year. I anticipate we'll see a pretty wide swath of players get votes when the final voting totals are announced and revealed. I think really there's going to be a unique number of positions and a unique number of players that got some love from people this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those who don't know, I didn't say it before, but the finalists are Kenny Pickett, quarterback out of Pitt, CJ Stroud from Ohio State, Bryce Young, Alabama's quarterback, and Aiden Hutchinson from Michigan. And we do have a nice contingent of Michigan fans in the audience today here on Spotify Green Room, as always. But, Cody, in your opinion, just Dan in the comments says it's become a joke and basically a QB award. But that kind of leads into the question I have for you. Is the spirit of the Heisman to you more about stats, or is it about picking the most valuable player among the best teams in?
To me, it's always been who is the absolute best player that meant the most week in and week out to their team. And I think statistical excellence goes along with that. Like, yeah, the punter for San Diego State probably means a tremendous amount for San Diego State and the Aztecs, but statistical excellence, like yards matter more than punt yards, touchdowns matter more than hang time, so it's a tough conversation for that. From a defensive standpoint, like sacks are nice, tackles for a loss are just as important as sacks. They're negative plays for the opponent as well. So tackles for a loss are super important for defensive guys. Like, interceptions are important, but passes deflected really matter as well when you're talking about cornerbacks or safeties, guys like that that can influence the game. And then really, I think the way that I've always looked at it, the way I've always approached it is, when I watch these games, when I watch week in and week out, who jumps off the screen? Like, if I just started watching the game and I didn't have anybody's names and I was just looking at numbers and I was looking and I was like, oh, 97 is jumping off the screen for Michigan. Like, oh, this guy is really good. Like, who jumps off the screen every week if you didn't know anything about football? And I think that's how I approach it. And certainly statistical excellence is going to be rewarded more often than not. Like, if you're getting close to previous Heisman winner numbers, like, you're going to be in the conversation. If you're breaking school records for your school, no matter the school, you know, you're going to be in the conversation. So statistical achievements are definitely important. And I don't think this is just a quarterback award. I think you'll see this year a big push towards, let's pay a little bit more attention to these defensive studs. Let's pay a little bit more attention to guys that affect the game on a regular basis that don't just have to have the ball in their hands. And heck, a wide receiver won it last year and came out of nowhere to win it and was even the best wide receiver on his team. Most people thought Jalen Waddle was the best wide receiver on Alabama last year. Devontae Smith ends up winning the award. Now, I know Jalen got hurt, but I think this award is going to continue to evolve. And yes, for a time, it did end up being a quarterback-centric award, but you also had statistical excellence and weekly excellence from these quarterbacks. I mean, think about how impressive Kyler Murray was every week. Think about how impressive some of these quarterbacks have been every week. And I do believe there will be a running back that wins it in the future. I do believe there will be a defensive player that wins it eventually. And I think there is an evolution with this award to reward the best player in college football going forward, not just the best quarterback each.
Yeah, I think that's cool to hear, honestly. I think, you know, it's the NFL sort of breaks it down. You know, offensive player of the year, MVP, you know, defensive player, they kind of make a category for everybody. I mean, and I know there's a category for every position. You can get the Biletnikoff and all this other stuff, the Buckus Award in college football. But, you know, in the NBA, you know, players play offense and defense, and there is, you know, awards that are broken up between, you know, different types of players. But I think the Heisman sort of becoming more of a universal, or just, I think for the optics, at least, for it to become, you know, more of an award where, like, you know, literally, you know, any position on the field, you know, has a legitimate chance. I think is awesome. Let's go through, Cody, each of the finalists, and give us your best argument for each finalist to win. Because I know you can't tell us who you voted for, but like, if you could just give me your elevator speech for each guy.
Yeah, that's a great call. So I'll start with Bryce Young. He's had a very tough year because the expectations that start for a guy like Bryce Young start very high. So achieving those expectations is, you know, like, beating what people thought you could do is an important element of your story, because all these guys really have to have a story. Like, you can't just be really good each week and like your team is average. Like, you have to have something, some sort of element. There has to be some sort of overcoming some large obstacle in your season. I think almost all of these Heisman Trophy winners have something of that nature where they can point to, oh, okay, this is one of those big things that I overcame. And I think for Bryce Young, most people would look around and say, this was not one of the most impressive Alabama offensive lines. This is not one of the most impressive Alabama offenses. And he's still very good. He's still very good. He makes plays. He's made some of those guys better. He's improved over the course of the season. And with that, I think that that is a big conversation point for a guy like Bryce Young in the conversation about, okay, compare him to previous quarterbacks. Was he as good? No. Did he have some of the same advantages those guys had? No. Okay, well, are there moments, are there pieces of his game where you can point to and be like, wow, that was super impressive? Like, They have scored no points, basically. Their season's on the line. A chance to go to the playoff is on the line. And he finally leads a drive down the field against Auburn. You know, they go into this SEC championship game. It's one of the best defenses we've seen in the past decade of college football, maybe one of the better defenses we've ever seen in college football. And he lights them up, and he does it with his legs as well. I think big thing for quarterbacks going forward is you have to bring something besides, like, you have to, like, obviously the stats are going to be good. The passing stats are going to be good, but excel at something else. And I think Young's ability to use the legs when he has to is certainly really impressive. CJ Stroud, I mean, it's just statistical excellence. Like, this guy has made the game look really easy at different times this year. I think you point to the fact that he gets more opportunities because the defense for Ohio State hasn't been as good. But I think with the defense from Ohio State not being to the level it has been the past couple of seasons, you get the opportunity to put more pressure on him. So Ohio State needs to be darn near perfect. And you talk about expectations again. Has to be darn near perfect every week. And Stroud was perfect on good occasions. And I get that the statistics for Michigan State's pass defense wasn't good heading into that game, but to do what he did in that game, I think really just kind of opens your eyes and how easy he makes it look. And that's one of those guys that just glides around the field, makes things look effortless. And when stuff does look hard for him, it doesn't stay hard for him, which I think is a big conversation piece for him. Kenny Pickett, I mean, you talk about a guy that puts a team on his back. You know, this is a guy that had a revamped offense in the offseason. Some of his best players are young guys, whereas you look at some of the stuff that Stroud works with, some of the stuff that Bryce works with, those guys have a little bit more experience around them, certainly at the skill position players. But Kenny Pickett's working with guys who obviously aren't as talented as those guys, don't have as much experience as those guys, and Pickett gets it done. Has overcome some stuff this season, really tough, a little bit of dual threat ability. You know, if the team needs 8 yards on, you know, 3rd and 8 to keep a drive alive, like, Kenny Pickett has a bunch of different ways to do it. He's going to make a good read, or he's going to take off with the football. And I think that being close to all these various records that Dan Marino put together for that school, I think that's a big element that matters too, because I understand that the logo on the side of the helmet certainly does matter to some people, but when you are putting yourself in a category with the best guy to ever come through to wear your logo, I think that's a worthwhile conversation. And then with Aiden Hutchinson, it's just a freak. I mean, jumps off the page. You see him every week. This is a guy that is regularly dominant, which is not easy to do at the college football level. You think about some of the really good defensive players in college football. Dominance every week is so rare. Like, you have guys that can disappear for a week or two, but when they arrive back, they can jump off the screen, and then they really impact the game. But Hutchinson, week in and week out, you can point to the fact that if this guy was not on this team, Michigan is not in the college football playoff. Like, that's how important he was to Michigan and to the Wolverine defense. And statistics are certainly important for him. I think, you know, I think number 2 or 3 in the nation in sacks. And so when you start comparing him to other defenders, and when you start comparing him to defenders that have been in the conversation the past couple of seasons, okay, like, I voted for Chase Young a couple of years ago in my third slot, because we get 3 spots. We get a 1, 2, and a 3, and then they receive, you know, 3 points for first place, 2 points for second place, and 1 point for third place. Chase Young was one of the best players I watched in college football a couple of seasons ago. He missed a couple of games that year. But I kind of did a little estimation, if he played those games, like, what would Ohio State look like? What would they look like without him? And then I start remembering and thinking about Chase Young, and it's like, oh, okay, well, he was dominant. It felt like week in, week out, like, he was just affecting the game. You had people double and triple teaming him. He was still having success. Does that apply to Aiden Hutchinson as well? Yeah, it does. It does apply to Aiden Hutchinson as well. Like, he has had a fantastic season. Like, teams know he's there, and he still gets – to pile up stats, he still affects the game. And so I think those are really the storylines and the things. And plus, getting over the hurdle that is Ohio State, that certainly helps in the conversation. Again, to the story of these guys. Like, I understand that it's a football game, and you can look at the stats and you can make it very raw and basic, but you can also be flowy and enjoy the pageantry of college football with each of these guys' stories. And so I think when you go through those 4 guys like that, I think that's how I would kind of couch the conversation with each of those guys.
Yeah, awesome. Cody, thank you for that. I appreciate it. I know you have a few more minutes. Aunt Bobby, do you have any questions?
I do. What's up, Cody? How's it going?
Doing good, man. Doing good.
Good. I think I joined one of your shows on here like about a year ago. I'm not sure if you remember me or not, but thanks for coming on, first of all. That's really, really cool. I'm not going to ask who you voted for because you can't, right? But can you give me a reason why someone like Kenneth Walker, who was a monster at Michigan State, like you're talking about a team who was, you know, over under from Vegas was 4.5 wins. And without him, they're probably a 5-7 team, 6-6 possibly. But you have a team who in the late weeks was a contender for a CFP and a Big Ten championship. How does someone like that, you think, get left off the ballot?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think really it's tough because Kenneth Walker is going to have a performance when you put it all together for the course of the season. He's going to have a performance that's really close to some former Heisman Trophy winning running backs, some guys that finished in the conversation in a couple of years. And I think because Michigan State did not begin the year in a lot of people's must-see TV, and then they turned into must-see TV for people. And then when there were the most eyeballs on them, I think they held probably the team performance against him. And a lot of times I'll go back and look and say, hey, okay, like how did this guy perform to previous guys that I voted for, to guys that have been in the conversation? He's right there. Like he's a very good football player. I think he ran into a portion of, you know, we talk about Ohio State versus Michigan State. That was kind of like one of those eliminator games. It almost feels like for some people that was kind of like a Heisman voting eliminator there. And that's the unfortunate aspect of us getting three spots is people are going to have to leave off really good players. Like, and I think the three spots is probably good. Like, I would complain about the Baseball Hall of Fame and say, vote for as many people as you want. Like, if they wanted me to vote for 10 guys every year, I'd vote for 10 guys every year. Like, I'd rank the 10 best players every year. I think he just ran into a situation where he didn't get enough probably first place or second place votes to be in the conversation with some of these other guys. And that's why he's left out of the finalist list. I have every expectation that he will be a guy that received a tremendous amount of votes. When you talk about guys that didn't end up in New York for the ceremony, I have every expectation that he'll have received plenty of votes from people.
Do you think if he had somewhat of an average game against Ohio State and that game was within about 2 scores, do you think then he would be a finalist? Which is pretty unfortunate because a lot of eyes were on that game because that was going to set the stage for how the Big Ten played out.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's eyeballs were on that game, and Michigan State did not perform well, and then he touched the ball 7 times. And so people didn't get to see that. Like, if that's a close game, if that's a 2-score game, he's probably right in the thick of things. He's probably right in the mix of things, making plays. And if it is a close game, I have every expectation he would have made those plays and would have been a conversation piece. And I think what people kind of ignored was, okay, like they lost to Ohio State. People maybe stopped watching Sparty. The following week, he went up against a really good defense, and he kicked Penn State's butt the following week. Like he was really good in a really close game. That was a really tough game. And so it's really unfortunate. And again, I think that people just probably highlighted a couple of other players instead of him. But I have every thought that he will be receiving votes. But I'm thinking as far as him not getting to New York, just not enough first and second place spots for him. So I think he'll have some votes and some points in the rankings. But I just didn't think he'd get it. He probably got enough first or second place votes.
Gotcha. Last question. I'm sorry to bug you here, but back in 2016, I believe they sent 5. Why only 4 this year?
You know, that's a good question that I don't truly know the answer to. I'm sure that there's probably they get the results and understand So the way this is done is like an accounting firm counts all this for the Heisman Trust, and then the accounting firm are the only people that know who the winners are. Like the accounting firm are the only people that know who won, like the person or the computer or whoever. And then I think they give the Heisman Trust an idea of, okay, these are the ranges for how these guys ended up in voting. And there's probably a cutoff for where they want to send guys, and you know, they don't want to have a guy there in New York and you find out that he was, you know, 1/8 of the total. And it's like, well, why'd you give the kid hope? Why'd you waste his time? Like, I think you need to be probably in a certain range before they would, before they invite you to New York. And I'll say this, I do want to get this in there. I voted for someone, and when the ceremony's over, we can release who we voted for in the order that we voted for them. I voted for someone who's not in New York. I voted for that person second on my ballot, and I think they're one of the best players in college football. And I'm shocked that they're not there. And I would expect that if they replicate this season that they had this season next year, then I would think that they might be one of the more unique Heisman Trophy winners ever. But they also had one of the best defensive seasons I've seen in a long time. So it may be tough for them to replicate that next year, just to give you guys a little, you know, read between the lines there.
Wow. Well yeah, we got some good guesses in the comments. I think we know, but we'll have to bring you back for sure to you know, help you. I mean, not to help you, excuse me, to have you expand more on the process and talk about the results for sure. So, Cody, thanks for your time. We appreciate you popping in and kind of giving us that context again, just about the process. And again, this kind of being a odd Heisman year, but you know, we're going to see, I think it's going to be an interesting ceremony, this Saturday, and we're looking forward to it. We're looking forward to it. And, you know, again, thanks Cody for popping in and chat.
Man, anytime. I wish I had more time to stay and tell you guys about how Mario Cristobal is going to win a national championship at Miami in the next couple of years, but that'll just have to be another show for another time. Love you guys. Appreciate you having me on, and enjoy the last little bit of college football we have left. Bowl season, the playoff, it's going to be fantastic. And I'm always down to talk some college football. So you got my number. You guys know where to find me on Twitter and stuff like that. Always down to chop it up, and I appreciate you guys having me on.
Take care, Cody. Enjoy the dentist.
Bit of an oxymoron there, enjoying the dentist.
Yeah, I knew he was going to a dentist appointment. So I don't know. I don't know. I'm just trying to be nice to the guy. Whatever. Yeah.
For sure.
But yeah, shout out to Cody for that. That was awesome. Always fun.
Afterwards.
Yeah. So this one will be. This one will be on my podcast, the Barbershop, and I'll put the link for folks, and I tweet it out as well. So if you follow me on Twitter, you'll see when I tweet out the link to the show. Let me put that link in here now. So while we're on the topic, and then we'll move on to some other things. Who do you guys anticipate is gonna win? Let's say that.
I think it's pretty clearly going to be Bryce Young, and I kind of I don't know if I disagree with it. I don't know if there was a very clear cut Heisman winner in terms of, you know, a guy that fits all the stereotypical points. But I think a thing you need to realize about, you know, the Heisman Trophy is there are a lot of voters, and for the most part, you know, they are not like our guy Cody, who does his research, does his stuff. You know, sometimes they're former winners. So picking just, you know, the Alabama quarterback is probably, you know, the easiest option. And not to disparage what Bryce Young did, he had a pretty all right season. But, you know, he has plays at a name brand school, plays at the number one ranked team in the country, and obviously has a Heisman moment with that incredible drive against Auburn. So I think that's enough for him to win it. I think that's just enough to have him stand out ahead of the field. But, you know, I don't know. It's been a very weird year for the Heisman.
This is a weird year. I think we did see surges late season from both Young and Hutchinson. So, and a lot of times that matters. And so it's hard for me to really pinpoint, like, you know, a winner. I'll say, like, Kenny Pickett's probably been the guy who's been – Pickett and Hutchinson have kind of been, like, playing, you know, great football the entire year. Not that Young and Stroud weren't, you know, but they kind of had their ups and downs, you know, more often than not this season. I think, you know, if you're looking for two guys that just were consistently dominant the whole year, it's definitely between Pickett and Hutchinson for me. And I don't know if Hutchinson wins, but I could see a scenario where Hutchinson's probably in second place to the surprise of people. My brain and my, like, reality check senses are telling me to say Bryce Young is going to win, but, like, I think it might go to Pickett. I think, you know, Cody mentioned a good point about how, you know, he's doing things that haven't been done at that school since Dan Marino, which says something. And, you know, again, you look at his numbers, you look at, you know, only two losses. You know, the ACC is down this year, sure, but I think Kenny Pickett's been probably the most consistent player out of the finalists. So I wouldn't be surprised if he won. And who do you think?
Well, it's going to be the Alabama cat, and which is, you know, it's whatever. But I don't think – I don't know, man. I just think that some quarterbacks are good because of the pieces around them in the scheme for them. When you have JT Barrett putting up crazy numbers at Ohio State, Duke can't even throw. Duke can't even – like, there's a reason why Ohio State quarterbacks struggle in the NFL. Like, the Ohio State system is built for them to succeed. So I just think that a lot of players get overrated because of the system they're in. And I think you know, Bryce Young's is a heck of a quarterback, but at the same time – who wouldn't be with 4-star and 5-star targets and future NFL first round picks pretty much every year. That's kind of where I'm at. You know, you have a guy like Michi go down or Mechie, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but you know, he goes down and you have a stud of a wide receiver like right behind him. You know what I mean? So I think Bryce Young is a great quarterback. I just think that, you know, not everybody's opportunity and environment is equal. And I think some teams and some players benefit more than others with their environment and who's around them rather than them themselves. And that's the tough part that like we can't really, you know, we can't really shake. But like that's kind of where I'm at with the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, sorry.
No, I was just gonna say it's absolutely right. Go ahead, Bobby.
I mean, I think the biggest thing is what have you replaced Bryce Young with? I don't know what one of the random Alabama quarterbacks that Nick Saban won with in like 2015. You know, I keep wanting to say John David Booty, but that's clearly not an Alabama quarterback. But you know, look, Alabama succeeded with a bunch of random white stiffs who couldn't do anything, and they're even better now because they have good quarterbacks. But that being said, they're not in the playoff because of Bryce Young. Bryce Young's in the Heisman race because of Alabama. That's how I.
Yeah, absolutely. Like that's, and I think that context is important. And you know, again, like it's unfortunate. Like I think people look at it differently. I think people, you know, don't necessarily, you know, keep that context in mind. And it's, I mean, it's college football. You know, what are you going to do? The success of a program, is going to attract recruits. And you know, the you know, again, successful programs are going to have good players, and that's just how college football has always been. So, it's an unfortunate, it's unfortunate, I think. But like, I also think that, you know, there has been years where, you know, you've seen players break the mold and you know, just have dominant seasons despite not having the best around them. And those guys, you know, have been rewarded. So we'll see if it happens this year. But yeah, it's kind of depressing talking about how just great Alabama is, honestly. So let's move on. Good talk, though, about Heisman. For sure, I'm excited to see what happens on Saturday. But Cody kind of touched on it before he went out, and I did want to ask him this if he had a little bit more time. But Ant and Bobby, so you know, we kind of have through the last couple of weeks talked about the new coaching, the coaching changes. Now there might still be a couple more, but you know, the big. Fish have sort of landed in their destinations. We've got Napier, who got the Florida job out of Louisiana. Brian Kelly at LSU. Lincoln Riley at USC. Mario Cristobal at Miami and Brett Venables at OU. So I'll go to Bobby first. Which coach do you think will have the most success in their new destination?
That's a really interesting question, because for me, I look at two things. One, what's the situation you're going to? And two, how good's the coach? I think of those coaches, Lincoln Riley might be the best, but I think he's going to a pretty broke down situation. I think that's the same case with Mario Cristobal. I don't know how Miami's going to succeed that well. So that's a little tough. I think it's hard to not pick Brian Kelly at LSU. As we've talked about ad nauseum on this show, LSU has the last time they had a head coach that didn't win a national championship was pre-Nick Saban. So that's, you know, an incredible track record for the Tigers. And let's be honest, Brian Kelly's no slouch. I think he has his flaws. I think the fit's weird. But at the same time, I think he's good enough as a coach to overcome some of that stuff. I think it's likely that LSU gets a title under him. If he doesn't, that'd be surprising. I think Venables at OU has a lot of potential, but there's a lot more. There's way too many unknowns. There's way too many probabilities. He's never been a head coach, and OU hasn't reached that mountaintop since 2000. So we'll see how that goes. So I'm just gonna go with the safe bet: Brian Kelly, LSU. Obviously, great state to recruit in. I think he gets the edge there and gets a title, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be interesting to see how all that works out. I think both Lincoln and Cristobal can restart these programs, but I think there are way too many factors that are wrong at those schools other than the head coach.
Bobby, I don't trust anyone who goes to an LSU basketball game and represents a fake Southern accent.
See, I'm with you. That almost turned me off on it, but
that was so weird.
Hey,
man, my family. I'm like, what?
My family.
Where did you all come from? You've been in South Bend, Indiana, for like a decade. What are you doing?
Grew up in Boston. What are you doing here?
My family from Boston. You know how southern we are, and on the Charles rolling down the Harvard. Yeah. Okay. Okay, bam. That right there, I hope he lasts 2 years, and that's it. That's all he gets. I'm going to put all my money into Lincoln Riley at USC. I just think the Pac-12 is so down. Pac-12 to me is like the Big Ten West, in my opinion, where you have a sleeping giant like USC. What Lincoln can do there, he's going to have to play some defense. He's going to have to get a decent DC. But if he's able to get the quarterbacks and he's able to put his system in right away, you know, I won't be shocked if next year they're possibly competing for a a Pac-12 championship. And then the year following, you're going to see them close to that CFP type of deal. You've already seen what he's doing recruiting. You put talent in that doo-doo conference, they're gonna make a lot of noise, and they're going to be at the very, very top of people's eyeballs when it comes to, hey, you know, who do you see as contending for the CFP? And Lincoln Riley, he's gone to the CFP, what, twice?
He's gone three times. Three times, four times as a coordinator. One of the times was a coordinator. So
four total times. So he knows what it takes to get there. He knows how to get his teams up for big games. So I'm going to put all my eggs in Lincoln Riley's basket. Mario Cristobal, good coach, but a little sus since Moorhead left. We're going to see how he's going to do down there. I know he's apparently – this is like Jim Harbaugh going to Michigan. This is like Mario Cristobal, you know, going to Miami. This is like – you know, he is Miami type of deal. So I'm sure the fans are going to be hype. Pretty sure they're going to fill the stadium probably 40% now. And it's going to be, you know, a couple years to get them back. But the ACC, like, Clemson's not going anywhere. They had a bad year and went, what, 9-3? Right? So, and that's a bad year for and nobody's talking about them. They could finish this year at 10-3, which a lot of programs would die for, right? And nobody's talking about them because, you know, because based off of their previous success, this is just a trash year. If their trash year is 9-3, 10-3, 9-4, they're going to be right back up there next year, in my opinion. Now with Venables gone, we'll see who comes in and is able to get that defense right to, like, keep the ship righted, right? But we'll see. But Lincoln Riley, all my eggs are in his basket.
I will say about Clemson, before Venables came and joined Dabo in 2012, he wasn't really lauded as like this great figure yet. They had won 10 games for the first time in a while. But, you know, Venables, a lot of people believe he was kind of the thing that kept that program, you know, really, you know, that pushed them into that level. So Clemson's going to have to find a good DC that can replace that type of energy, that type of, defense. That type of defense has to keep going, and that recruitment has to keep going, because Dabo on his own, you know, we haven't seen a lot of success.
And I was going to say, Clemson's calling card last year was defense. Like their offense was terrible for most of the year, but their defense was lights out. You know, even held Georgia to 10 points. So, in that first game. So yeah, that's going to be a huge, question mark going into next year. What is their defense going to look like? I'll let Josh and Darnell come up to give some thoughts as well.
What jobs do you guys see opening up here, or some pretty good jobs that are open now that you would see someone like possibly Josh Gattis from Michigan, or maybe like a Luke Fickle who thinks that he's literally reached his ceiling at Cincinnati? What do you guys see in terms of jobs possibly opening up here soon? Because this is a big recruiting week coming up here this month. So a lot of colleges have to make their decisions fairly quickly.
I think Oregon's the top job available by far. And that's going to be a very interesting spot to fill. There are rumors, not sure how true, about Chip Kelly returning to Oregon. I don't really see that happening. I think he has things rolling at UCLA. Not the time to leave that. But really,
Pete Carroll. Yeah.
What's that?
Pete Carroll also.
Oh, potentially leaving the Seahawks? I could
not
see
leaving.
That.
He didn't get fired.
Oh, well, he's still leaving, just not on his own accord. But really whoever fills that or leaves, you know, to go fill that Oregon job, that will be the new biggest opening. I don't see Fickle leaving. I think he loves that area. I think he's a Midwestern guy. And I will say, I think Cincinnati does have more of a ceiling to go. Even after this college football playoff, due to their move to the Big 12, and especially if the Big 12 can get a a guaranteed spot for their champion in the expansion, in the playoff expansion. So I think Cincinnati has a lot of great things ahead of them. So I see Fickell staying, but, you know, hey, I also didn't see Lincoln Riley, Brian Kelly, and Mario Cristobal leaving this year. So who would
I kind of tweeted this out, but I kind of want to get your guys' takes. These contracts that you're seeing by some of these head coaches, these yearly numbers are getting pumped quite a bit. And you see colleges really looking to invest and lock some of these good talents down because they've seen, you know, one bad hire can sink your program for like a decade, right? So how long until we're going to see some of these DCs and OCs get some longer contracts with bigger numbers?
I think you see it this offseason.
Sorry. And what was the question? When do we see less years?
When do we see some of these OCs and DCs, these offensive coordinators and defensive coordinators, some of the more, some would say, just as important as the head coach, right? When do we see these guys start to get contracts that aren't just like a couple years? Like, these are like a legit, like few years, and they're getting extended along with the head coach, and their numbers are going to start getting up into that $3-5 million per year.
I think it's this year, man. Look at all of the OCs and DCs as like playing musical chairs. Ohio State just took Oklahoma's DC. DC from Clemson goes to OU. They saying that the OC from Clemson is still up for like two other jobs. And so, I mean, if you want continuity in your program, you can't give them head coaching money, but you're going to have to give them something to think about, or you're going to get your OCs and DCs swiped right from under you from other programs. I don't know how much Oklahoma State was paying their DC, but you got to assume that he got a raise to go to Ohio State, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Hold on. Who's DC went to? Oh, Oklahoma State was really good on defense this year.
Yeah, no, that guy is remarkable. I believe Broyles Award nominee for best assistant coach. So that he should be getting the big bucks at Ohio State. And it's kind of funny when you look at it. Ohio State's offensive and defensive coordinators both are OSU transplants. Oklahoma.
I think to answer your question too, and I think it depends on if the program views the offensive and defensive coordinator as just as important pieces as the head coach. I think that in a lot of cases they should be, because losing a offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator could be just as pivotal as losing a star player in the transfer portal, right? So, I mean, these are players that are used to a specific system. And if you want to keep playing good football, like in Michigan's case, if you want to keep playing this type of football, Gattis seems like the guy, so you better pay him, right? I think, especially with a job like Oregon open, I think Gattis would be really good for that job. And I wouldn't be surprised or shocked if they wanted to send him an offer. But like I was saying, I think it's you want to create this culture and establish this culture and fit and kind of scheme. And with this musical chairs of offensive and defensive coordinators going on, it's just a lot of it's difficult for the players, I think, more than anything. So. I think we need to start that now. They need to be valued more.
I think it's just, it also goes against the nature of the position, right? Most coordinators are looking to be head coaches one day. So it's kind of like an up or out situation. I know Venables is like kind of the exception to that rule up until, you know, this past couple weeks, but most coordinators aren't looking for a 10-year deal as a coordinator because they know that they can go double their salary, you know, as a head coach somewhere else. And that's usually what they want to do. And it usually benefits the head coach of that school to have coordinators that get promoted because then it kind of it shined. Then they get, you know, younger coordinators to come work for them, knowing that they're going to place as a head coach somewhere. So I think it's just the nature of the coordinator position that prevents them from signing long-term deals more than anything.
I mean, look at – I forgot about Bobby just put it in the comments. Look at Penn State. They just lost both their they lost both their defensive coordinators, the co-coordinators. Of course, they went and got head coaching jobs, but I can see what Josh is saying. Nobody wants to – you want to be your own man. You want to be the head man. I'm not so much worried about trying to stop them from being the head man. I think you have to raise the price to make sure that you don't lose them to rival programs. Like, and they're making lateral moves. Now, if you're going from an OC if you're going from an OC to a head coach – or DC to a head coach, man, go get your money. Go become your own man. But no way do I want – if I'm the coach of Alabama, no way – if I'm Nick Saban, no way do I want my offensive coordinator saying, huh, Brian Kelly needs an offensive coordinator. They're going to pay me $1 million, $2 million more. I'm going to go rock it with Brian Kelly at LSU.
The action – oh, I was just going to say the Action Network's Brett McMurphy just reported that LSU is prepared to offer Jimbo Fisher an 8-year, $125 million deal, $13 million per year. That is insane.
No, that's old news.
No, yeah, just drop now the actual numbers.
No, that's been reported. That was when that was before they hired Brian Kelly.
Yeah, no. I was saying that they were going to do that.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm not saying they're trying to automatically replace Brian Kelly because he said family, but
no. For a second, I thought family. I thought you were saying he was going to be the OC at LSU for $13 million or something.
Brian Kelly probably walked straight up to a po' boy shop and was like, "I'll take one poor boy sandwich, please."
I'm surprised. I'm surprised he didn't wear a seersucker suit and say, "Well, I declare."
I need a window seat because this flower is a wilted.
God damn it! I do. I was gonna say though, with these DC OC, I know for a fact, like Mike Elko, the DC at A&M, who's one of the highest paid coordinators in the country, he is looking for short term deals because he wants a head coaching position and he doesn't want that to be impeded by a large buyout. So like he's not gonna sign a 10-year, $30 million deal because the school who wants to hire him as his head coach might be like, that might be too much of a buyout to hire this guy. So.
I also think that coaches have to start to do a great job of grooming replacements. I mean, with success, you have to know that people are going to come and take your OC and DC. I know I was reading that, the offensive coordinator in waiting for Michigan is Matt Weiss. The guy to replace the associate head coach, has been rumored to be Mike Hart. So, I mean, you have to advance these people on your staff too, because people are looking at your position coaches like, yeah, you could come over here and be an OC. And so I just think it just comes with the territory once you become a program that has an up-and-coming staff.
You have to build a program that's stronger than just that head coach, because if it's all about your head coach and all about what they can do, someone snipes them, what do you have left? And thankfully, there was for the situation of OU, thankfully, there was a lot there historically where Bob Stoops can swoop in. And basically, it seems like he's just bringing in the old guard from the Stoops era with Venables. And they just actually took Texas A&M's strength and conditioning coach.
Schmitty, who was
at OU during the Stoops era. So it seems like they're kind of getting the band back together.
Once again, Bobby, thank you.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you for getting Venables. That's going to pay dividend in recruiting for Michigan.
Oh, yeah. Hey, well, maybe now we're, going to be in the mix for more defensive guys, though. So, I don't know. The culture is a change in Norman for sure.
Well, folks, we got a few minutes left. I want to jump into bowl games real quick. I'll just kind of go through – we won't do the CFP, but just some of the New Year's Six and other bowls. I'll shout out some games and then I'll just ask for folks' picks. Let's start with the Outback Bowl, Arkansas and Penn State. in Tampa?
Well, all right. So you got to go Franklin. All right. Franklin in Florida against a really resurgent Arkansas program. I mean, Arkansas was basically like the Rutgers of the SEC. Like they were almost as bad as Vandy. Correct me if I'm wrong, Josh, but
they weren't as bad as Rutgers, but yeah,
they were really, really bad. Really, like, I think there was like a 3 or 4 year stretch. They had like one SEC win. And what they've done this year is awesome. I just think that with a little bit of turnover at Penn State, them not closing the year off strong, I just think that Arkansas wins that game. And that's where I'll be with that one.
I'll put it this way. I'm with you, too. Arkansas is thrilled to be in the Outback Bowl. Penn State probably sees this as a disappointment. So give me Sam Pittman and the Hogs to get this win in the Outback Bowl. They've been playing great. They have that right energy. And they're, you know, bowl games are so much about, you know, just these random bowl games, not the CFP, about who decides to show up, who has the energy, who wants to be there. And obviously, I think Arkansas definitely wants to be there. They've come a long, long way from losing at home to North Texas.
Thanks, Bobby. And is Jahan Dotson, is he draft eligible? He's not playing in that game, right? No yes. way.
I doubt it. And that was going to be my analysis, as if Sean Clifford even plays. I know I don't think he'll get drafted, but just from the fact that he's been hurt all year, I mean, that could also be a very big factor in Arkansas win. I mean, I pick Arkansas too, but I don't think there's any way that Jahan Dotson plays in this game.
And I'm pretty sure Penn State has the worst backup quarterback in the country, and I don't think it's close.
I don't know about the worst. What? But,
bro,
I mean, bro, I'm pretty sure there's some backup. Bro, there's some backup situations. On purpose,
just to play defense against him.
Yeah, but
were kneeling to play defense, pretty much. They're like, look, you are our best offense by not going anywhere.
I'm gonna pick Arkansas just for the turnover. I mean, you don't have your defensive coordinators now. The rumor is your offense coordinator may be getting another job too. So, coaching staff in shambles. I would pick Arkansas.
Jump in, Mike. Yeah. What's up, baby? Yeah, there's levels to this. I'm so glad we got all the GOAT Franklin supporters in the room today. So if you get fourth place in the Big Ten East at Michigan, you get docked your pay. We tell you that you're unfortunately at the lower third in coaching staff. That's what happens. Penn State, for getting fourth place, gave their coach a 10-year extension. 10-year extension. Definitely probably got a raise in that. Actually, it's crazy how that contract, I think we talked about it last week, how that contract looks in terms of he gets paid years left on his contract. That is crazy. And if anything, Michigan has gotten better. Their coaching staff has gotten better. I actually think we have our succession plan in place with Mike Hart. That's another discussion for another time. Ohio State is clearly going to still be a factory. And Mel Tucker right now, bro, just because the way he uses the portal, Michigan State is well underway in terms of surpassing Penn State. They're in trouble. And it actually will begin with the bowl game even more so this week. I can't believe Arkansas put everything on.
Notre Dame, Oklahoma State, Fiesta Bowl, Glendale, Arizona.
I'll start off with saying that ESPN absolutely cooked Notre Dame during the selection show. And the one graphic they displayed was that since 1998, they're 0-7 in BCS/New Year's Six games, losing by an average of 23 points a game. So I'm not taking
Marcus Freeman. Marcus Freeman, like, I think I'm supposed to hate Notre Dame, but I have no quarrels with Notre Dame. I couldn't stand Brian Kelly because he's such a shitty person.
But outside of that, like, Notre Dame, they don't really boil my blood. They don't get my temperature up. They don't get my blood pressure up. They don't give me anxiety. I just think that this is going to be a game for that the Irish plays hard for Marcus Freeman. And this will be his first game as head coach, right? I just think they come out and they play very, very well for him.
I have Notre Dame, Michigan State, and Arkansas already in a parlay. Take them money line, all three of those teams. They're absolute locks. Kyren Williams will also be the best player in the game, in my opinion, from the offensive side of the ball, in terms of skill position. I know in terms of Notre Dame's history, unfortunately, they've been in bigger games than what they should have been. This is a really good spot for them. And Marcus Freeman, another guy who's on the come up, and will also be stealing from other people's recruiting bases. And in fact, even going to be doing even better. Yeah, and that's the thing about Kyle Hamilton. I think he will for Marcus. I actually think he will, because Coach Freeman, I have friends like up there in terms of Notre Dame's administration and on the development team. They couldn't be more excited about where things are at. Great show today, Wheezy.
Give me Notre Dame too.
Look, I like Oklahoma State. I think they're a solid team, but how are they going to bounce back from almost pulling off that Big 12 championship and the playoff and a potential playoff appearance? I don't know if they do. On the other hand, like everyone has said a lot, Freeman is a guy that everyone's excited for. I'm sure Notre Dame's ready to get out there, win one, you know, to spite Brian Kelly. I think Notre Dame has this.
Bobby, you were so close. Win one for – you just got to say the Gipper. Come on.
Yeah, win one for the not – well, I mean, I don't know what you would call Brian Kelly, you know. He's not the Gipper, that's for damn sure.
He's a family man.
All right. Ohio State, Utah, Rose Bowl.
Bruh, I've been so excited about this matchup since Michigan won the Big Ten championship. I know that this probably is recorded, so I won't say what I really want to say, but Utah is absolutely going to beat the living crap out of Ohio State.
I love it. Ohio State's going to have so many opt-outs, and Utah is just so damn tough.
They're so physical. If they thought they had problems with Michigan pushing their defensive linemen around, bro, Utah is just as physical. They might be a little bit more physical.
What is the spread in that game? Ohio State, yep. Right?
Yeah, I mean, Garrett Wilson's definitely not going to play. I don't know how many opt-outs they're going to have, but it's going to be a ton.
Because Olave is draft eligible. Najigma's eligible, Wilson, but they got guys still. But you guys may be right. You guys may be right for sure.
The Buckeyes have guys, and they always show up for Rose Bowls. I feel like that. You know, even though, you know, they didn't make the playoff, obviously got their doors blown off against Michigan. I feel like Ohio State still shows up and gets a solid win here. Utah did well, but they're iffy here and there. We'll see how it pans out. It's Utah's first ever Rose Bowl, so they'll show up too. It's going to be a good.
For sure. This is the last one. This is not a New Year's Six Bowl, but it should be a good one. And this is one that obviously our Michigan residents may be interested in. Pitt, Michigan in the Peach Bowl in Atlanta.
State, Michigan State.
Yeah, I was about to say, Michigan's in the playoffs there, Max.
I mean, this is going to be a big game between Michigan State and Pitt because Pitt has Narduzzi. As you guys know, Narduzzi was the defensive coordinator for quite a while at Michigan State. So this is going to be a huge, huge game. I probably have Pitt for this one. A close game, though. But I've got Pitt. That quarterback they have, man, against that defense, I think Michigan State has one of the worst, passing defenses in the country, if not the worst.
And Pitt is going to have a chance to put up a lot of points.
See, I think this game is just incredibly disgusting. I don't like it. It's just a mess. On one hand, you have a Michigan State team that's, you know, has not been great, grinds it out. And then on the other hand, you have Pitt, who, let's be honest, while they are flashy, good things are not allowed to happen to Pitt. So, you know, I think Pitt's used up all of their goodwill winning this ACC championship. And, you know, I don't see it for them. So with that being said, I'm going to go Michigan State here. I think they're just the better team across the board. And I think.
Give me Pitt. This is a strange game because if you really think about it, a first-round quarterback and Kenny Pickett probably shouldn't play. But when he looks at how bad Michigan State secondary is, he's going to be like, hey, sign me up so that I can submit myself as the first quarterback to be gone in the draft. And so I think that Pitt is going to throw the ball and throw it often on that Michigan State defense. And I think Narduzzi has something to prove. Because I've always said that Narduzzi wanted to come back as the Michigan State head coach, and he's been passed over at least his last time. And so give me Pitt.
Yeah, I agree. I think I take Pitt in the over here if I was a betting man. But I think they're going to throw a lot. I think it's not anything crazy to say that a decent amount of coaches have figured out Kenneth Walker in their run scheme. So if you shut him down, Michigan State's offense is very, very average. So I like Pitt in the over.
Yeah, if Pickett plays, it's over. Michigan State can't stop a nosebleed.
Yeah, and I feel like, I mean, I don't know, like, where – I like Doug Darnell said, I mean, Kenny Pickett's going to be a first-rounder probably, you know, depending on how the draft process goes, Senior Bowl, all that good stuff, like, probably the first QB off the board, but I would still imagine he may play just to put some more on tape when it's not necessarily guaranteed, you know, especially with – you know, it not being a year where, like, he'd be the number one pick or anything like that, or probably wants to put some more. So I'd imagine he played. This is a pretty big game against a good opponent. All right, cool. Well, yeah, great show, y'all. This was an excellent show. Shout out to Cody Stutz for popping on. Shout out to Tyler, Josh, Darnell, and Michael for coming up on stage. And Bobby, I appreciate you guys, as always, for bringing what you guys bring to the table. This has been a great year in college football. For folks listening, shout out to you guys and thanks for coming through. We're going to take a 2-week hiatus from college football content because there's not going to be any college football for a couple weeks. But when we come back on Wednesday, the 29th, we're going to, you know, get more in depth with the bowl games, discuss any news that comes along and give you guys some good content as always. So
no signing day reactions, Max?
Nah. unless if something crazy happens, then yeah, we'll have a reaction room. But yeah, formally, we'll take a couple weeks off and get back. Of course, you can always catch me every morning here on Spotify Groove Room. That's not changing. I'm actually, for folks interested, gonna be flipping to doing more college basketball content on Wednesdays, and then when the college football season is over, that's going to be what we'll do. But yeah, 2-week break, catch us on the 29th of college football. Myself, Amrite, and Bobby, and thank you all again for popping in this morning. It was a fun show. Y'all enjoy the rest of your Wednesday, and we'll see you next time here on Spotify Green Room.
I'll see y'all later.
Well, I declare.
All right, y'all, that's it for this episode of The Barbershop. Keep showing us love. We appreciate it. Go ahead and rate and review this podcast and also share on social media and tell your friends about us. And if you're feeling generous, there's a link in the description to become a monthly subscriber. You can do it for as little as 99 cents and you can support this podcast and help us to grow and to glow. We appreciate all the love. We'll see you next time here at The Barbershop.
Stay tuned.